Good morning, it's 6:30, and that's the best of the 70s and the 80s. Eric Carmen there with the Hungry Eyes, and before that we had Saturday Night in the Park, didn't we, with Chicago. No news at all, no new news. Looks like the rain is abating a little bit there on the east coast in Wairawitiwiti, or whatever it's called. What's it called? Gisborne. There we go. That's the one. I better get that right. But in the international news, we read about the electric vehicle charging companies, didn't we, that they have to include the Tesla plug. If they don't do that, they can't be part of the state program to electrify the highways. They need to get onto that, don't they? They need to get that infrastructure right if they're going to have electric cars all over the place. I just think they're a waste of time, really. I really do. Give me a good old diesel V8 any day. A group of media organisations today appeared in court, they appealed the a court decision to allow a collapsed crypto exchange. That's the FTC, remember that one. They want to keep the names of their customers. They want to keep that secret because they're during that bankruptcy case. And in transportation here, Pete Buttigieg, he is the Secretary for U.S. Transportation, and he's warned today that the potential delays starting on the 1st of July for airplanes, they call them airplanes in America, don't they? Airplanes over here, that they've got to have their altimeters. They have to have their radio altimeters. I can't even say it this morning. I'll say it an easy way. Altimeters there, but that's not how you pronounce it. It's altimeters. They have to be updated to address the potential 5G, which is the C-band interference. And that has to be done. That's needed. Otherwise, you're going to have trouble there. The Russian FSB security services said just a moment ago that they've detained five people. They were trying to buy 1 kilogram of radioactive cesium-137, and they were paying $3.5 million, and they were doing that on behalf of a citizen of Ukraine. That was according to TASS. And that's about it on the international news at 29 minutes to 7 here at the Wireless. The Mama Hooch, this has just come through. The rapist father alleged police forced women to lie about his sons. Oh, really? Yeah, I think there's a bit more to that, I think. Yeah, there is a bit more to that story, I think. I'll have a closer look at that, and I think we need to be very careful here because, I mean, even, what's his name, Andrew Tate, he's been arrested, he's under house arrest, I think, again, for similar sort of things, that you're accusing him of similar sort of things. And I just wonder whether it's just an attack on masculinity. I wonder whether you just don't know, do you? There's so much propaganda in the newspapers. It's hard to know who to believe. I was talking to Omo last night, and he said it is very difficult to know who the heck to believe. And who do we vote for this year? Honestly, I don't know what's going to happen there. We've got Democracy NZ. About four people have walked out of that party. We've got Samantha Edwards, no relation to me, but she's with Counterspin Media, and she put out a story about Brian Tamaki, and then he said they've threatened to sue them, and then they've done a response on that, and then I think there's someone else from Destiny Church. They've come out and done a video and sort of not abusive, but done a video sort of accusing Samantha Edwards of what did they accuse her of? Oh, just talking nonsense, I suppose. And that's that. And then she's come out. It's just back and forth, tit for tat, isn't it? Did we have REO Speedwagon? No, we didn't, did we? We had Eric Carmen. How about REO Speedwagon? It's 27 minutes to 7, and you've got a dodgy old Grant Edwards. Can't remember what he's played next, but when I hear it, I'll know whether I played it again. You'll be ringing me up and saying, "You've already played that, yeah, granddad." Here we go. Today's best music. We've got the hits from the 70s and the 80s today, Tears for Fears, and before that we had REO Speedwagon. I was just having a look at that story on Stuffed, and that's the one about Danny and Roberto Jazz. They're alleged to have, they've been accused of it, and they've actually been found guilty, and I think they're in prison right now. One of them got beaten up, didn't he, a few weeks ago. The Mama Hooch Rapists, the heading, this is terrible, isn't it? The father. So this is the Mama Hooch rapist's father accused police of corruption, alleging they forced women to fabricate evidence against his sons. The man made the explosive claims in 2019 after his sons Danny and Roberto Jazz had been charged with serious sex crimes and drugging linked to the now infamous Central Christchurch bar and also the nearby Italian restaurant Venuti. As a result, the venues both owned by the Jazz family, they were under scrutiny from various agencies, and the brother's father whose name is suppressed, met police and other officials in March 2019 at the Christchurch City Council offices, where he alleged to have said, this is what he's supposed to have said, "Why do the police force these girls to make up these lies about my sons?" And the quote was later recounted as evidence at the hearing, which can't be identified for legal reasons. I don't know what they mean by that. We just said the quote can't be identified. It was said, apparently it was Sergeant Dave Robertson, he said that, he recounted it, who he was at the meeting. And according to Robertson, the police's alcohol harm supervisor, that's what he does, the father also defended his son, saying, "These girls, they throw themselves at my boys," and that Danny had never had to force a girl to do anything. Danny was officially stood down as Mama Hooch's duty manager after his arrest in 2018, but continued to work at the bar, something his bail conditions allowed, but which was of serious concern to the police. Alberto, he was the chef at Venuti. He was barred from visiting the venue, and the father said that he needed to be there because he had to show the new guy. Anyway, better go and have a read of that story. I won't read the whole thing. It is quite interesting, though, and I think there could be more to this one. This story is written by Blair Ensor. He's with Stuff. And Stuff, they used to be part of Suburban Newspapers, I'm pretty sure that they was, and then they changed the name to Stuff. I don't know why. I mean, I suppose I use the word Stuff, don't I? Like I sometimes say, oh, that's some pretty good, they've put out, like Rascal Flatts, they've put out some good stuff. So I probably shouldn't say that, it's probably not proper English. But Stuff is a Bible word, actually, believe it or not. It just means things that belong to you, your belongings is stuff. So it is actually an English word that we can use. Anything new happening in the news? I did tell you about the electric car, their vehicle charging companies. They have to include Tesla's plug, otherwise they're not going to be part of the electrifying program in the state, the part of the state program. Where is that? At Washington, Washington State. I don't think that's the whole of the United States. And a group of media organizations today, they appealed a court decision that allowed collapsed crypto exchange FTX to keep customers' names secret during that bankruptcy case. And then the U.S. Transportation Secretary, Pete Buttigieg, he has warned today that potential delays starting July 1st for airplanes that have not yet had their radio altimeters updated. And they have, that's to address the potential problem with the 5G, that's the C-band interference, and he's urged them to adjust schedules if needed. And that's about it. So just the Mama Hooch story there. I don't think there's anything new. Let's have a quick refresh and just see if there's anything new going on there. No, the builders found that safe, and they're going to try and crack it. A woman is using micro-dosing mushrooms to help her beat alcoholism, drunkenness. And the social worker at the Ministry for Children, it's got a Maori name, can't remember. That's more allegations there on that sexual abuse. And we've got a big game, though, haven't we? Superstar Rugby, Pacific Final. Yeah, so whip over to Stuff. You can have a look at that. Everything you need to know about the game, that's the Chiefs, isn't it? It's the Chiefs versus the Crusaders. It's in Hamilton. I think that's tomorrow night. And all you rugby guys, football, All Blacks, that's rugby, isn't it? Yeah. Just going. Oh dear, sorry about that. 7:15, and let's get on with a bit more music. Who do we have? We've got Blondie. Oh yeah, I love Blondie. I love this one. Deborah Harry, isn't it? Today's best country on the wireless. Of course, not today. We're not playing the best country today. We're playing the hits from the 70s and the 80s. I might have some noughties in there and some 90s, but I don't think I have any actually at the moment. Hey, that's something strange going on there. Blondie. Oh, we played Alana Miles, didn't we? Black Velvet? No, I don't think we did. Why did that not work? It must have. Let's see if I can put it in again. Yeah, or maybe we did play it. Gosh, I'm getting dodgy, aren't I? It's 7:07. You're with Grant Edwards here at the Wireless. I'm here till 9, and I'll try not to go over. Let's have a look and see. I want you to go in and watch this movie. It's a wonderful documentary film by Mickey Willis. Mickey is spelt M-I-K-K-I, and so it's called The Great Awakening. And it's about an hour and 40 minutes. I've watched it a couple of times, and I've broken up the whole lot into sort of between 1 minute and 5 minute sort of segments, just to give you an idea about it and to sort of to encourage you to go over and have a look at it. It's very important because it tells us how the communists have infiltrated our bureaucracy, our country, America, every Western nation, is now in the grips of a globalist communist takeover. And of course, communism, the main aim of communism is to remove of private property. And that's why you can see things happening like all this extra regulation for farmers, which is just, you know, there was an interview with Chantal Baker, did one with Operation People, with some Southland farmers just in the last few days. That's just been put up on operationpeople.com. Go over there and have a look at that. And they just say that they just can't get their head around all this new stuff that they have to do. And you've got your landlords now. They're making it very difficult for landlords to be in that business. And then we've got a shortage. And then you have people like Klaus Schwab and those people from WEF talking about, that's the World Economic Forum, talking about things like the smart cities. And we know now that every council in New Zealand has signed up to the smart city idea, 15-minute cities, 5-minute cities, 10-minute, 15 and 20-minute cities. Hamilton's got a 20-minute city that came out in the Herald a few months ago about the 20-minute city there. And I think what they'll do with those 20-minute cities, if you really want to know about 20-minute cities, go over to counterspinmedia.com. counterspinmedia.com and have a look at Miranda Edwards, Samantha Edwards. Have a look at her report. She is no relation to me, but she's a very good journalist actually, and a great musician as well, a very talented young lady. And she is there's one there on the smart cities. She's done a real expose on those. And also, definitely go and have a look at that. That's well worth looking at. So let's have a listen now to Mickey Willis in his documentary film, just a small sort of a clip from The Great Awakening.
What matters most to you?
I think what matters most to me is freedom. Freedom. I want as little laws as necessary to keep us from killing each other. I mean, I get it. There's crazy people out there. We have to find a balance. In the end, I want my children to live in a world where they're free to dream, to take risks, to fail, to succeed.
Hardship strengthens us. We wouldn't have had the American Revolution and the beta model for the American Constitution, the beta model of a republic in the modern world, unless the tyranny of King George had been unbearable. All the good things in life usually are a result of some kind of a rebound against something that's very not good at all, very painful.
I mean, I think about if someone had jumped in there and taken away my failures. I can't do what I'm doing now if someone had kept me from really hurting, really learning lessons that were hard to learn so that I would never make that mistake again.
In a philosophical sense, we should be thankful for this movement that's happening, in spite of the fact that it's tragedy and it's hurting people and all that. But without it, we might just go right along in that pot and be boiled in time. But now the frog is jumping out, and we have a chance coming up here now to create a new vision, and it's going to be great.
It's a bit cynical, but it is in the end good news that mass formation and totalitarianism always destroys itself in a relatively short time span. And the most important thing, of course, is that you have to make sure that the system does not destroy you before it destroys itself.
Throughout history, it was always the very small minority. History has always been written by the 1% of the population. 15% of the population create history, and they follow the leadership, the thought leadership of 1%. But that 15% altogether is what changes history. And so all we have to do is reach 15% of the population. I think today, after all this time, we have more than 15%. We just have to get them together so they realize that they're not alone. And that's our task right now.
I don't think our societies have taken the moment to look up and actually see and appreciate how much progress has been made in the past century. On so many different levels, we have made incredible progress. Like, what we've got here is actually great. It's imperfect. And we should still be making tweaks carefully to try to make it better. And I think that's where so much of that self-hatred or hatred of the nation or hatred of the other or whatever comes from. This lack of perspective and gratitude and inability to take a moment, chill out on the activism and go, wait, actually, okay, we've achieved a very unique and special point in history. And let's be careful with that.
On that note, as sure. A man who's traveled the world.
Yeah.
Have you experienced any nation that has course corrected beyond their sins more than the U.S. has?
No.
It's sad to see Americans who live in a free country, born as Americans, and do not recognize their privileges. You are born American, a free country. You never suffered a starvation. And you need to go to other countries to find out why all the immigrants, millions of them, want to come here.
What is happening in our backyard today, I experienced as an 11-year-old. I remember vividly all the promises that a guy named Castro gave on how 99% of the people swallow the pill. He was going to save Cuba. I remember how he promised to the farmers, to the Guajiros, that you're going to own the land. I remember all the promises that we hear today about free education and free health care, a free land. Oh my God. No freedom.
And that is from the documentary film by Mickey Willis. It's called The Great Awakening. Can't recommend that enough. Still to come on the radio today, this morning, we've got Smokey, Kenny Rogers, Berlin is there, The Cars, hopefully you can play them, and The Police, of course. And then I might even just pull in a few. I'll pull in a few country songs. I'm starting to sort of want them back now that I haven't been playing any. I didn't play any yesterday. I think I started off with some, but they're a bit depressing, but I think I've found some now that look all right. And also, there's a very good documentary that you want to have a look at. It's actually a TED Talk by Kerry Mellis, and it's about 24 minutes long, and you can find that on YouTube. And Kerry Mellis is spelled K-A-R-Y-M-U-L-L-I-S. He is, you know who he is? I'll tell you, he's very important. He passed away just before the COVID thing broke out. I think it was about September in 2019. And then the first case came out, I think it was in late 2019, wasn't early 2020. But he is the inventor of the PCR test. And some of the things that he says about Fauci are unbelievable. And I've got a little recording here that he did with a reporter way back, well before the COVID thing. And he was talking about Fauci with his, the way he was treating the AIDS patients. And many believe that Fauci, really, those people died because of Fauci's poison, basically, instead of, it was the treatment. And I can't quite remember the name, but 7:01, let's have a look at the weather. We've still got a red warning in force for Gisborne due to the prolonged rain. I think the mayor there is just saying, you know, don't be, make sure you just stay on alert there. Let's have a look at the short forecast, shall we? It is for Northland, you've got fine spells with a few showers. For Auckland to Wellington, including the central high country, mostly cloudy with scattered rain. Coromandel Peninsula and the Bay of Plenty, periods of rain with possible heavy falls. Thunderstorms are possible as well west of Te Puke. For Gisborne, Hawke's Bay, rain with heavy falls and possible thunderstorms easing south of Tolaga Bay this evening. For the Wairarapa, also for Marlborough and Nelson, periods of rain with heavy falls in the ranges about the eastern Marlborough area. For Southland and Fiordland, cloudy periods, patchy rain, mainly from the afternoon. And for Canterbury, Otago, that's North Otago and Dunedin, mostly cloudy with occasional rain or drizzle. For the remainder of Otago and Southland, partly cloudy, fog persisting in the valleys for you. And for the Chatham Islands, you've got cloudy periods. Let's have a look at the extended forecast for Sunday for the North Island. Rain in the east, easing, then clearing in the south, scattered showers elsewhere. And the mainland tomorrow, No, tomorrow, Friday, today, isn't it? What? It's Saturday today. Got to be joking. I'm going nuts. I thought today was Friday. This is the trouble when you live on your own. You shouldn't really do it, you know. I don't know. Anyway, it's Saturday. Is it also the games tonight? Good grief. And I've got a croaky throat. So tomorrow's Sunday. Okay. Well, tomorrow you've got, we did that, South Island, you've got rain and showers for most, but only a few spots of rain from South Canterbury to Southland. Here I am thinking I'm doing Friday morning. On Monday, you've got in the North Island rain. Oh, that's just ruined my whole morning. Rain and you've got showers for most and some heavy in the South Island. Rain in the west and north with heavy falls easing late. Scattered rain elsewhere. Clearing late apart from the far south. Does that make any sense? On Tuesday for the North Island, rain and showers easing about the central areas. In the South Island, you've got a few showers. In the west, clearing and fine. Mainly fine elsewhere, but rain developing north of Christchurch later. Chatham Islands, you've got cloudy periods all weekend. Half the weekend's just about gone. You've got a few light showers. Northeasterlies and you're becoming strong, and they're becoming stronger on Monday. And you can hear that thing, that frog crawling up there, can't you? I want to have a croak. So let's play some more music. Oh, we better play some Saturday music. Oh, dear. How about the Kinks? Let's have a listen to the Kinks, and then we'll come back with Rod Stewart after that. It's 7:05. I can relax a bit. We can play three in a row now. You don't have to be so worried about the time. Oh, good grief. Here we go. Today's best country on the wireless, but today we're playing the 70s and the 80s music, and Grant Edwards got out of bed and went into the studio and on his day off, and now he thought he was doing Friday breakfast all over again. I don't know why. He must have had a few too many last night. Fancy that. Got out of bed at 4 o'clock this morning and go and prepare everything, do the this day in history. I've done all that. And gosh, what a waste of time! I could have been sleeping now. I could have had another 3 hours. I could have been. I feel like going back to bed now and just leaving you all to it. Put it on auto. I can't do that now, I suppose. It's 9:10. We don't really need to worry about the time, even unless you're working on a Saturday. This is the trouble when you work for yourself and live alone. You know, out in the wops. I mean, if I lived in town, you'd see that, you know, the road, people went buzzing off to work, you know, like they do, and school kids and that not going to school. You see all that, don't you, out the window? But not when you live on your own out in the wops, you know? I mean, I love it, eh? I just love being out away from, I don't like towns anymore, don't like the city, I'm not racist, I hate everybody. Oh, I don't really hate everybody, but here I am. So you live on your own, and that's what happens. And you work for yourself too. If you work for yourself, there's no real structure. Every day's the same. If I feel like I want to work all weekend, I work all weekend. If I want to take, you know, Monday, Tuesday off, I take Monday and Tuesday off. So that's the trouble when you're on your own and you're not married. And oh dear, and the kids have all left. Apparently, though, if your children don't live in the same town as you, you live longer. There's been some research done on that, so I suppose you don't worry so much, or they don't come over and bother you, or borrow stuff, or want to load all their boxes and all the stuff that they want to put it in your basement or something, or store it for you. That's usually what happens, isn't it? And then they go crook at you because they say you're a hoarder. and then it's a big pile. You're walking there, and it's quite dangerous actually with hoarders. Things can fall on them, and they get hurt. I've been in some houses where there's people hoarders. Back when I sold real estate, when did I do that? Started in 1989, I should say. I came out of radio, was in radio for a little while, and then did real estate from 89, I think, right up until, I sort of had a few patches at it, really. I went into publishing in 92, published my first magazine, and only because the Hero were mucking us around, and the local papers, you know, they were mucking you around and charging a fortune, so I just said, I'll blow it, we'll just do our own magazine. And I did that in Ponsonby, and we did it very successful. And then I sort of went round all the real estate agents there in Ponsonby, and we put together a really good little magazine. It was just a 4-page tabloid to start, and then it went up to 8 pages, and then just went on going. I think the biggest one I've ever done is almost a 100-page real estate magazine. Absolutely fantastic back in the day. They were called Property Extra. And then Property Extra or Extra was pretty big. We had these really neat bins outside the real estate offices, and we had them, you know, they were quite ahead of their time, those ones. And there's still a few of those floating around, actually. And that was my brother and I, Trevor. We had a lot of fun together. And my older brother, great. Oh, fantastic. I remember I was very sad when he left home when we were living down in Levin at Wirrawa Road. And he left to go to boarding school at Whanganui. And I was quite sad, really, because I did enjoy my brother. We had a lot of fun together. And my sister, too, Valerie, she was marvellous. She went off to dental nurses college, and that was all a bit sad. It was good to have them in the house. And there was a bit of an age gap there. I don't know what happened. Mum and Dad sort of... I can't go into details, but there was a bit of a gap there. And there's an eight-year gap between my brother and I. And then I came along in 1960. And then they said that... Leanne, my younger sister, she's 3 years younger, they had her just to keep me company. And by then, you see, Dad was about 40 when I was born, and Mum, I think she was 42 when I was born, 42. So she was 45 when Leanne was born. That's quite old, isn't it, for a woman? So she's good on her, doing really well. She should have had more, I think. I think it would have been good to have more kids. The more you have, the merrier, because there is a shortage of British people, English, British, Europeans. There's a shortage. We're not breeding like we should do. I think in Europe it's down to about 1.7 kids. I don't know where you get the 7 from, but you know, when they do calculations like that, I think it's really low. It might even be 1.3 in parts of Europe, and that's too low. Whereas the Muslims, they're breeding like flies, like rabbits, because they have a lot of wives too, don't they? And each one has a child. So they're allowed more. I think they have, on average, in Europe, is about 8 children per family, and quite a few wives as well. I think they're allowed up to 5 wives. They're polygynists, not polygamy. It is polygamy, but polygynous is just where the man, he's the man. The woman has to stay with the husband until he's dead. Once he's dead, then she's free from him, and then she can marry someone else. She's a widow, but she can't get divorced in that religion. I think the man can send you away. That's divorce. He can send you away if he's not happy with you. That happens. It's not a bad religion. I'm just kidding. Andrew Tate, he's become a Muslim. I think that's silly. I hope he doesn't read the Quran too much. And also those writings, the Hadith, the writings of Muhammad. Don't take it too seriously, mate, because if you do, well, you'll be joining the terrorists, because the terrorists are actually just very good Muslims. They believe the Quran. They believe it to the letter, and all the rest of the Muslims, the ones that behave themselves, the ones that live here, and you know, they're not terrorists or anything like that. They're actually just backslidden Muslims, because the Quran is a bloodthirsty book. Sir Winston Churchill called it the Mein Kampf of war. 7:15. Live through some sad times. Today's Best Country on the Wireless with Lucille, and no, that's not Lucille. That's the song about Lucille, and it's Kenny Rogers. What a great voice he's got. Very relaxed, isn't he, when he's singing? Just a beautiful tone, Kenny Rogers. And before that, we had The Cars. Did we have The Cars? I don't even think it played. Sometimes they don't do that. Andrew Tate. No, we didn't have The Cars. I tried to put it on. I'll just try again and see if it'll work. The Cars. Or maybe we did. Did we play this one? I don't think we did. Did we? I'll play it again. Honestly, I'm going nuts. I'm just living on your own is probably not such a good idea after all. I thought it was a wonderful idea, but I don't think it is now. Coming to work on Saturday morning, and I'm supposed to be having a rest, and I've got other work to do. You know, I can't be here on the radio. I should be up doing... I'm supposed to be welding, laying beads, miles and miles of beads today, and beads of welds, and that's what my job is today. And we don't even need to worry about the time, really, isn't it? It's coming. It's almost 7:30. That's near enough. We don't need to worry, because most of us don't go to work on Saturday, do we? Oh, I suppose a lot of people in stores do, but they don't. Probably wouldn't start till about 9 o'clock, a lot of them. Gosh, I remember when I worked as a builder, and then I went to work in retail after that, and I couldn't go. Oh, it was just marvellous. You know, you had all these extra hours of sleeping, and then you go to, you know, you stroll up to work at, you know, 8:45, start open the doors at 9 o'clock. It was lovely, and I just thought it was wonderful. But then after a while, you know, even that's too early, isn't it? And I found that when I was in retail, I almost went mad. You know, it's you just go stir crazy if you're, especially if, like, remember I told you I had that business. I was 19. I actually made a mistake. I said 17. It wasn't. I was 19. And I started a shoe store and got Mum and Dad to back me. Gosh, they were good. they had so much trust in me. I don't know what they really, it was unwarranted. I think I didn't really know what I was doing, but we did all right. Mum had to bail me out in the end, though. I just about went bankrupt. She was a good businesswoman, my mother. But the bridge went through, didn't we? I bought this bridge in Mangere Bridge before the bridge went through, you know, the new bridge, and they had the old bridge. And so, but it was the main highway, almost like a highway. It was the busiest road in the country. And it went all the way through to the airport, didn't it? The Mangere Bridge, the old bridge there. And, you know, anyway, I've forgotten what I was going to tell you. Never mind. Don't worry. I'm a bit of a strange one this morning, aren't I? Let's. I want to play this. This is the Jewish grandma. I found her last night when I was looking around, and she's fantastic. The Jewish grandma. And have a listen to her. She's got some good tips on how to save money.
What are your biggest money tips for people watching today?
First of all, you should have a savings account, no matter how little you have, and put it away every week something. Then you can buy secondhand clothes. The women are spending too much on clothes. The designer thrift shops in Manhattan and all the expensive neighborhoods have the most wonderful consignment clothes. You can buy for your children and yourself. Save a fortune of money, and you look lovely. That's two. What are you going to do with all the money you save? Buy real estate. Real estate's the best investment. And there are always places that from people are starting. Like today, it's Tampa. I just heard about it. Tampa's great. The prices went up already in the last 6 months. Then you have to learn not to overbuy and not to waste food. Use your leftovers. Use them wisely. And teach your children. You don't give a two-year-old an apple. You cut it up because he'll take three bites, throw out the rest. Have you noticed that? Don't give them a whole apple to eat. Oh, I can go on and on. You don't want to hear it all.
Oh, we love it.
Well, isn't that great? That's the Jewish grandma. And she had good advice there. Buy real estate. You know, she don't go buying shares. Michael Wood should have listened to her. Then he'd still have his job, I suppose, wouldn't he? Michael Wood, that's our member of parliament, or ex-member of parliament, has been sacked. Oh, he actually resigned, didn't he? But he would have been sacked, I think, if he hadn't have resigned. Let's have a listen to the theme song from Top Gun. It is 27 minutes past 7. Good morning. I'll try and behave myself. There we go, that's Berlin, and that is the theme song from the Top Gun movie with Tom Hanks. No, it's not Tom Hanks. I can't remember his name anyway. I wonder if I've had a stroke and don't realise it. You know, fancy coming and doing a whole show, getting up at 4 o'clock, and I normally get up early, and I was late. I normally get up even earlier than that when I do these programs. And, yeah, fancy that. Gosh, I can't believe it, you know. And it was halfway through the weather, and then I realised that it was actually Saturday because I looked at the. If I'd looked at the long range forecast before I started this thing, I probably would have just gone back to bed. But because it was what tipped me off that it wasn't Friday, that it was actually Saturday, was when I was doing the long range forecast and looking ahead to tomorrow, and then it said it was Sunday, and I thought, no, what's the day? And then I looked out at the computer. And there, sure enough, it's Saturday. Saturday morning and 29 minutes to 8. I hope you don't have to work today. I guess the people that do those markets, they'll be up and about. They'll probably been up for hours. I wonder if there'll be some markets. There'll be some markets all over the country. Aren't they great, those farmers' markets? And, you know, a lot of organic fruit and vegetables are sold there. And if I ever go back onto the fruit and vegetables, maybe that's what I need to do. Maybe I've had too much meat and need to go back. I'm just like wide awake. I just can't wait. Go to work, you know. Boom, boom, boom. I just love it. Getting up in the morning. There's something about eating meat. I don't know. You know, I harp on about it, don't I? But there is. I couldn't believe it. First of all, I had some medical problems. They just disappeared. And Jordan Peterson, that he said that he had gum disease, and that he said it's incurable. And he was on with Joe Rogan. He said it's incurable, and he's eating just meat only, a carnivore diet. The lion diet. His daughter, of course, Michaela, she's been on it for almost 6 years. This is her sixth year, I think, just with meat only, and she hasn't got scurvy, and she looks fantastic, and she's healed up of a lot of the problems that she had, and she does it out of necessity. She'd love to have vegetables and things like that, but you can't. For some reason, you can't have veggies and fruit and all that sort of stuff. And so this is called the elimination diet, really. You'll find her, though, at thelionediet.com. Michaela, there, she's a beautiful woman, and she looks just a picture of health. But she was very, very sick. She had arthritis, and so it stopped all of that. She had she's got an actual hip. She had a new hip put in, so she's got an artificial hip. All as a result of this childhood arthritis. I think they call it arthritis. I think that's the name. When she had problems with your bones and things, isn't it terrible? And of course, usually it's older people that get arthritis, isn't it, later on in their life. I wanted to tell you a little bit more about that Titan, that terrible just a catastrophe, wasn't it, with five people on board. They were all killed. The movie director and submersible maker film, he makes the films, and he also makes submersibles. James Cameron, he says he wished he'd sound the alarm earlier about the submersible Titan that imploded. And he says that he actually became a deep sea explorer in the 1990s while researching and making the Oscar award winning blockbuster Titanic. Remember that? Now, he's part owner of Triton Submarines, which makes submersibles for research and tourism. And he's part of a small, close-knit sort of submersible community, or they call them manned underwater vehicle, MUV. That's the industry. And he heard, and as many in the other in the industry heard, they shared that OceanGate was making a deep sea submersible with a composite carbon fiber and titanium. That was the hull structure. And that worried him. He said he was skeptical about that. He said, I thought it was a horrible idea and I wished I'd spoken up. But I assume somebody was smarter than me, you know, because I never experimented with that technology. But it sounded on the face, sounded like a bad idea on the face of it. That's what he told Reuters earlier today. So that is James Cameron, very skeptical. He just wished he'd spoken up, poor guy. And just goes to show you do. You know, you've got to speak up, don't you? You can't be a spectator in life. You've got to be a participant. And I learned that a long time ago. I was actually going with a girl. She's a journalist, and there was she taught me that, and I like that too. You're either going to be a spectator or a participant in life. And I think that we do need to speak up, especially we need to keep the pedal to the metal on making sure that the politicians and all the doctors and all the officials that forced us to be jabbed and mandated us out of work, we need to keep the pressure on there, because these people need to be brought to justice. There needs to be a Nuremberg too. And we can't let them forget about it now. And they're all just running for cover. There's all these other red herrings, and you know, we're just off chasing rabbits when we should be chasing deer. We should be hunting deer. What I mean by that is that we've got to keep the pressure on and stop and keep reminding them. I know you get sick of it, get sick of hearing it. But we're just in a lull at the moment. There's going to be another virus, fake virus, come out, and they're going to do it all over again. And this time they're going to be ready, because they're going to have the vaccine passports, which is going to be linked to the money system. The whole thing was a trial, really. I think it was an absolute trial. And so we've got to keep reminding them at every opportunity. And that's what I like about John Ansell. He's a former ad man, award-winning ad man. He's done advertising for the National Party, for Labour, for ACT. He's done the whole lot. And David Longy said that his advertising was brilliant. It helped them win the election. And and the trouble is, though, he said they'd never do what I told them to do. Sometimes they wouldn't do what I told them to do, and we could have really gone big and better, but they don't. They seem to not want to win. And I like him, and he stood up in the upper hut at that meeting with Ashley Bloomfield. He was addressing the people at the upper hut council buildings, and John Ansell stood up, and you can find that on his Facebook page. He's got two pages. Go and friend him. Go for the one that's got the most friends. I think that would be the one that he'd be using at the moment, John Ansell. And he's very outspoken. He's against the Maorification of New Zealand. He's not a racist at all. He's got lots of Maori friends, but he doesn't want co-governance. He doesn't want that, and he thinks that everybody should just be on an even playing field with, and doesn't matter what the colour of his skin is. And I agree with that totally. I don't think there should be even Maori seats. I think that's racist. I've always thought that. I thought, why do they have special seats? What's the story there? Why do they get special treatment? Oh, we're here first. Oh, really? Well, that's just not good enough. We're all here living together. And that, when I read that treaty document, 1840 treaty document. It says that we all come together. We're under the monarch, and subjects of the monarch, and we are one people. They've got the same rights that we have. They're protected by the law, and of course they were eating and killing and eating each other. And that's probably why they really wanted to have a proper treaty. They had the Declaration of Independence, but it didn't stop the killing. So they wanted to join with Britain because they knew they would be protected from other tribes. And there was a lot of Christian Maoris. There were more Maori missionaries in New Zealand than there were British, by a long shot. They just took hold of the gospel and they went all over the place. Went right down to the South Island and apologized. I think the son of Tarapraha, him and his nephew, they both became Christians when they were about 17, and they went down to the South Island and apologized to the people that his father had killed and eaten, and brought them the gospel. And so he was incredible, and he lived just like an Englishman, I think. And he had even had his servants were British servants, and there's photographs of them there. He's just amazing, and he's my hero, actually. I've read quite a bit about him. Tarapraha, the son, I can't remember his first name, but it'll come to me. I remember his nephew, Te Whiriwhiri, I think it was, and they took a ship. They actually asked a couple of Bay of Islands ministers, I think. Hadfield, I think they asked him to come down to Kapiti, and I think they settled it. He settled at Otaki, and he said, "And can you bring us some Bible, little Bibles and gospel tracts, that sort of thing?" And I think they had them in English and in Maori. But these guys, they could speak beautiful English, and write the writing. Tamihana, that's his name, Tamihana Tarapraha. His writing is incredible. He can string a sentence together better than I can, that's for sure. So so they really did learn English and Maori. And before the Native Schools Act, when about 300 prominent Maori, I believe, my son's done a bit more work on this than me, but there were 300 sorry about that 300 prominent Maori, they lobbied, I think it was Takamoana, he was a Maori MP, they lobbied him to stop Maori being spoken in school. It had nothing to do with us, because prior to that, I guess when they had, in the early 1800s, I think it was Thomas Kendall and his wife, Kate, I think her name was, they had a little hut where they used to teach the British kids, and also that's the missionary kids, the Protestant missionary kids. Of course, the Catholics were just busy, printing hymn books and their Catholic stuff and that in Latin. No one could understand it anyway. They did it all in Latin. Couldn't understand a word of it. It was a waste of time. There was no gospel being taught by the Catholics. But the Protestants did, and they taught Maori and British kids, their own kids, both Maori language and English. And that's what they did. And it wasn't banned. I mean, it was just because they were trading. I mean, English was just the language of trading. So they spoke pretty good English. They learnt to speak it. And then they went to the mission schools, that's right. Tamihana went to a mission school, and Te Whiriwhiri, he did as well. I think I've got his name right. He went to mission schools, and that's where they learnt. They learnt the gospel, of course, learnt all about that, learnt about the Bible. They probably learnt English from just reading the King James Bible. They reckon it's one of the best books you could ever read to learn English. It's got it's very simple, very, very small words, actually, most of them. Some people say it's hard to read, but in actual fact, when I was publishing, we used the Flesch Kincaid grade level indicator. And we found that it was actually the simplest and the simplest language, simplest version to read. Much easier than, say, the NIV, the New International Version. Kent Hovind calls it the Nutty Idiots Version. Much easier. That was a grade level 8 on the Flesch Kincaid grade level indicator. And so we would do that with works, that writing. We would put it through that to see how difficult it was. And the King James Bible was about a 2 or a 3, very simple. And the reason for that is that they use Anglo-Saxon one- and two-syllable words. A lot of it are like home, house, devil, two syllables. What's an easy one? So the King James Bible would say old, and the new version would say elderly. That's three syllables, and that's a more difficult word according to the Flesh Kincaid grade level indicator. And so even though we use those words, it's, you know, sometimes the way the words are put around there, they're actually very simple words, and it's very easy. It's also much easier to memorize scripture too, than memorize the Bible, if you use the Flesh Kincaid, if you use the King James Bible. So it is a lot, it is easy, and it's, of course, it's the most maligned book in the world. Christians hate it. Most Christians can't stand it. And why is that? Why do they not like that old book? It's beautiful English. And, you know, it was the time of Shakespeare. Wonderful. There's nothing like it. It was a top seller in the world. I think the Bible still is the top seller. And there's quite a few publishers that are publishing Bibles, but they have to change it, you see. It has to be changed by so much percentage, otherwise it's copyright. But there's no copyright on the King James Bible. There's a what they call a crown copyright, but that just ensures that you can't change anything in it. That was what that was about. So you can just go off and print a King James Bible, no worries at all, so long as it's exactly right. That's the crown copyright. That was what that was for, and not to make money. Whereas you've got publishers now, some of the big publishers in the world. Can't think of any at the moment, but you know, they own the NIV is owned by Rupert Murdoch, I think. He owns that. And so you have to keep changing that every year. There's all these new Bibles. There's hundreds of new versions of the Bible come out, and they all follow a different type of text as well. They follow the Alexandrian text type, whereas that's the King James Bible follows the Received Text, they call that. And it's quite different, and that all started in 1880. And we better not get onto a lesson now. Let's get back to the music. I do waffle on a bit, don't I? I know I do. So we've had James Cameron, and there's a whole heap of you there. Sorry about that, going off on a tangent. Some of you might find it interesting, but probably most of you don't. Let's have a look at Reuters and see what's happening there. Just to have a quick refresh. Ukraine, they've signaled on Friday, today that is, of course, that the main push in its counter-offensive against Russian forces is still to come. The main one, still to come. They've lost tens of thousands of people. There's over 150,000 troops have been slaughtered by that, and no one knows about that except me. Ah, boy, it's not just me. I heard about this. Omo told me to go and have a listen to Colonel Douglas McGregor. He's a former White House advisor. Colonel, he was during the Trump administration, and he's got a lot of information there on what's going on. He's not some old dodgy old guy either. He knows what's happening. All of the news that's coming out on Reuters and everything that's coming out on our news here is absolute propaganda. Ukraine is just badly mauled. The place is it's decimated. It has been decimated. And we've got soldiers, you know, our people are training these people to go to their deaths. Australia and New Zealand are doing that, Canada. We're all helping and training these people. We're training them. We're actually in a war against Russia. It's a proxy war, and we're using the Ukrainians to do it. So Colonel Douglas McGregor, and another person that you need to look at, and I'm going to put it up on our website so you can go, just to remember, to remind you, Alexander Mercurius, like Mercury, spelt that way, Mercurius, he's very good as well. He'll give you some insights. He's got incredible intelligence to do with this war, and it's nothing like what we're hearing. The first casualty in war is the truth, and we are not getting any of the truth through our media. It is because I suppose they want to just keep pouring millions into it, these ideologues that are running this, that NATO, they've got, I don't think they have any idea where they're going to go. Are they going to, if they attack Russia, it is, they're fighting Russia. They've awoken the bear. And I think it was last week, Colonel Douglas McGregor said that the Russian forces, they fired 60,000 rounds of artillery at these forces. That's in one day, 60,000 rounds. It's just, he said, it's like raining steel from the sky. And the hospitals are overflowing with wounded Ukrainians. And Russia has had very few casualties. It's insignificant, really. And I think in the last 15 days, the first 10 days of that first offensive that Ukrainians tried, where they tried to attack the Russian defence lines, 10,000 people were killed in that, 10,000 soldiers, young and old, because they've got old people in there too, fighting. It's just horrendous. And, you know, we're responsible for this. The West, we're the baddies. We are attacking Russia. That's what we're doing. NATO and America, and we're all part of that. And we ought to be ashamed of ourselves. And if people realise just what was going on, the death toll, it's thousands of people. It's 150,000 already. This is the death toll so far estimated. In that first round, I think it is right now, because they had that attack and they got mauled in that, they would come in against the Russian forces and then they'd come into a minefield. This is the Ukrainians. And then the Russians would count, they would go, they would encircle them and lay new minefields, and they couldn't get out. And I think there was something like, they estimate 15,000 soldiers were killed in the first 10 days. In the first 3 days, 7,000 were killed. And so, we've got to wake up on this one. It's absolutely terrible. Law enforcement here, let's have a look. Biden, United Auto Workers, that's the UAW union president, Sean Fain, he said today he harshly criticised the US Energy Department. They plan to lend $9.2 billion in a joint venture with Ford Motor Company, and South Korea's SK On to build three US battery plants, though they're not happy about that. Pakistan on Friday criticised the United States and India after President Joe Biden met with Prime Minister Narendra Modi at the White House, and both leaders called on Pakistan to ensure its territory was not used as a base for militant attacks. They're all upset about that. And what else does he have? GSK. Get it out, boy. GSK agreed to settle a US lawsuit alleging its discontinued heartburn drug Zantac caused cancer. The British drug maker said on Friday, that's today, preventing the first such case from going to trial next month. Blimey. And so that's interesting, isn't it? I wouldn't touch any pharmaceuticals now. I will not touch it. I wouldn't even go to a hospital or a doctor. The only time you'll catch me in a hospital is if I'm in a car accident or have really badly injured myself. I won't be calling for a naturopath or a homeopath, will I? God, I've just had a car accident. Could you book me in? No, I won't be doing that. So, yeah, they are good for that thing, stitching you up, that sort of thing. But all the drugs they're putting out, I don't trust them anymore, not after COVID. They should have spoken out, but they didn't. They wanted to protect their jobs, keep the house, that sort of thing. Many of us lost our homes, in the middle of losing our homes, because it takes a while to go bankrupt, doesn't it? Because we couldn't find new jobs. A lot could find new jobs, but sometimes it's a bit hard when someone moves the cheese. You keep going back to the same old place with the cheeses. Remember that one, Who Moved My Cheese? That was a very good book. And one mouse kept going back to the cheese and it was gone. Someone had moved the cheese, and he kept going back to the same place. But the other mouse went off in different directions looking for more cheese in other places, and that's what you need to do. I think you've lost your job. You just have to keep looking around somewhere else, and that's something that my family have always said. And always, when one door closes, another door opens. You can't be worried about it. If you lose your job, you've just got to try and find another one. But there are people that were pretty, you know, in a bad place, and the property market's, you know, not. They say it's coming back, but it took a bit of a turn after COVID, and so that didn't help either. It is, what are we up to now? 2 minutes, 8 minutes to eight, and we'll play another song in a minute. I'll just have a look and see if there's any new news for you on Stuffed. I don't think there is. No, just the Mama Hooch guys. The father's saying that the police, he's making allegations that the police, he's accused the police of corruption. So that you'll find that story at Stuffed. And a family uncovered a mystery safe beneath the carpet of their garage, and no one told them about it. They forgot it must have been sold a few times, and they forgot to mention the safe. But I shouldn't think there'd be anything in it. So they're trying to have that cracked at the moment to see if there's any jewels in there. And of course, we heard of James Cameron. He was he should have spoken up, should have been a participant instead of a spectator. And the micro dosing mushrooms has helped a woman beat drunkenness. And what's happening, Super Rugby final is all you need to know about that. That's tonight. I thought it was tomorrow night. That's the Chiefs versus the Crusaders. And what have we got? It's the National have got their conference this weekend too. So there's an opinion piece there done. I'm not sure who did that opinion piece. This is on Stuff. National will be using its weekend to hammer Labor's dysfunction. But it's a relationship with ACT also. They'll have to be talking about that. And what else is there in the headlines? That's about it, really, for me. Should we look at the weather? We'll do that now, shall we? I'll just do a quick refresh in case there's something new in the weather. The temperatures are quite good on the North Island. Even in the South Island, it's pretty warm at the moment. The highest today is Westport with 16 degrees. Invercargill, you're at 2 degrees, quite chilly down there. The Chathams, you're 11. 9 in Stewart Island, Dunedin 13, Timaru 10, Christchurch 13, and Blenheim, you're on 13 as well. Invercargill, minus 1, it's dropped a bit. It was 0 earlier this morning, but, you know, as the sun comes up, it tends to get a bit chillier before it comes warm again. Just before the dawn, isn't it? It's the chilliest, I found. That is the case. Franz Josef, 10 degrees. Westport, absolutely cracking, 16 degrees. Nelson, 13. Wellington, 13 degrees as well. Palmerston North, 14. Masterton, 11. Napier, you're on 15 degrees today. Taupo and Rotorua, both on 12 degrees. New Plymouth, next to Mount Egmont. Oh, I love it. 13 degrees. Gosh, great to be able to be free and say stuff like that, isn't it? Gisborne. Oh, no, it's not the new name for Gisborne. It must be the area. I thought they'd changed it. The name for Gisborne is Tūranganui Kiwi. Tūranganui Akiwi. Akiwa, sorry. Tūranganui Akiwa. That's the name. So, you know, it must just be an area in Gisborne. I should have done a bit more research on that before I was piping up yesterday. And Tauranga, you're on 15 degrees. Gisborne, 15. And Hamilton, you've got 13 degrees along with Auckland. Whangarei, 11 degrees, and Kaitaia, you're on 9 degrees. Quite chilly in the north and in the far south. But Stewart Island, look at that. Stewart Island and Kaitaia both on 9 degrees, and everything in the middle is all warm. It must be because of all the cloud cover or something keeping us nice and warm. And, hey, thanks for joining me. There's a whole heap of you there from New Zealand. Good on you. We've got the Canadians as well. G'day to you there in Toronto. And also in California. Hi. Thanks for joining me. L.A., thank you very much, and good to have you on board. And stick around, you'll learn all about New Zealand, according to Grant. 4 minutes to. Woke up this morning, thought it was Friday morning, got up at 4, it was late, you know, I think it was about 4:15 by the time I finally dragged myself out of bed, you know, preparing for this thing. I've done all this preparatory work, and I probably don't even need to bother about half of it. And and then realised halfway through the weather at 7 o'clock, realised that it's actually Saturday today. It's not Friday, and I thought it was. And of course, it's Friday in the United States. Of course, in the Northern Hemisphere, it's Friday, but not for us. We're over in the States anyway, in Canada. And so that was a bit dumb, wasn't it? But anyway, welcome along, and thank you very much for becoming a, clicking on the old click there of the wireless. And I better play some music. How about, what do we want? Do we want to do some more 70s and 80s? Or should I play something else? Did I do the Cars? I can't remember. Look, we'll just have a go. Don't worry, just play it again.
Broadcasting from Dingo Flat, Onga Onga, the wireless, today's best country.
Fake news. Today's best country on the wireless, and that is Jeep Jones Illuminati. Yeah, they've spelled it wrong. It looks like Illuminati here, if you ask me. But so I might have to change the spelling, because I've been calling it Illuminati, but he keeps saying Illuminati, doesn't he? I suppose that makes more sense. 8:05, you're with Grant. We've got I'm in two minds today. Mine's all over the place. Gemini, typical, isn't it? You know, you talk to yourself, you answer yourself. I could argue anything. I could argue either side. They say that you don't really know a subject until you can debate it and argue it and win the other side, even if you don't agree with it. That's what I like about my teacher. Back when I was a little boy, we went to a Fairfield school in Levin. Her name was Jenny Bunnell, and she taught us how to debate. And I think that's missing in schools today. Yeah, and people are frightened of debating, aren't they? Scared stiff. And a lot of them don't know how to debate. They use argumentum ad hominem, which is, you know, attacking the messenger. Sometimes they'll just change the subject. That's another tactic when you're debating with people. And it's a good thing to debate. Argument is a great thing. You know, but they've made, we've turned that word, and it means something that means something bad, doesn't it? Now, an argument. It sounds terrible. It's just a debate, an argument. But you hear that and you think, oh, that's terrible, bad. You know, talking about politics, that's bad. When we should be talking about politics, because we need to figure out who we're going to vote for, who's going to be in control of the country. So that's another important thing. They say religion and politics, two of the things you'd never talk about in public with friends. But I disagree. I think politics is important. Who's going to govern us? And religion is important as well. How do we get here? Where are we going when we die? Those are important things that we need to know before we kick the bucket. Because, you know, if the Bible's true, and there's some things in there that say that we've got to do if we want to get to heaven, you know, and you really should read it, and don't listen to what other people tell you the Bible says too, because it's just so confusing. Just go and read it for yourself. It's simple. Just start in the New Testament, because we are living in New Testament times. This is, you know, since Jesus, and then you can do that's the milk, you know, read the milky stuff, and then you can get on to the Old Testament and start reading some meaty stuff. But right now, don't start in Genesis. I mean, that's quite good, to, in a way, tells you how we got here. And I believe every word of it, actually. Every word, even on the front cover, it says Grant, just inside, Grant Edwards. I believe that. Every word. But, you know, start with the New Testament. You could start with Matthew. It's got the genealogy of Jesus. It shows you that. And then there's another gospel that's got a genealogy. It's slightly different. And the reason for that is if they were identical, that would mean that Mary and Joseph would have been brother and sister. But they weren't. That's why it's different, slightly different. And but I would start in John, the book of John, and read that. And that'll teach you. But don't listen to what other people tell you it says. Just read it for yourself. Get hold of a King James Bible too. Because you don't want to be reading from a corrupt version. Because the Bible itself warns us that there will be many that corrupt the word of God. So we're warned that it will be corrupted. People will try and do it. But God promised in that book itself makes claims about itself. It says that God will preserve every word of it forever. But it doesn't say that in the new versions. And it also doesn't even warn us about corruption in the New Testament. That word is not even mentioned in any new version, as far as I know. Maybe in some of the ones that were not quite as corrupt as they are today. They're very corrupt, you know, and people just find that people have no idea. They're reading from a totally different type of text. There's only two types of Bibles, actually. The best person to go to and learn about that is, I was going to say Kent Hovind, but it's not him. He used to be against, you know, people that that thought the King James Bible was the one you could trust. He was against that. But then he met Gail Riplinger, and he read her book, New Age Bible Versions. And now they've become good friends, and he believes now that the King James Bible is the one that God has preserved in English for today. You only have to do it once, don't you? When you do a translation, if God is really behind it, if He is inspiring it, 47 translators, but they had no idea that every word that was going to be in that book was inspired by the living God. Even corrected some of the Greek, that King James Bible as well, and. So, you know, the guy is, I'll think of his name, and he's got a video series, What's the Big Deal About the King James Bible? Brilliant. And there's people out there, they hate him because he's a King James man. But Dr. Sam Gipp, go and have a look at his stuff. I might even put a link up, or maybe not. Maybe I will. It's 8:09, you're with Grant, and I'm in two minds as to whether I'm going to play more of the 70s and 80s hits. I am going to play Christopher Cross, Lord willing, if I get there, if I don't have a stroke or a heart attack. In the meantime, we can't be boastful, can we? About we don't know how long we've got, do we? Especially when you get older like me, you could kick the bucket at any old time. You just got to be ready, don't you? Ready. Make sure you've read the Bible. Make sure you've got your verses around the right way as well. Do not listen to other people. Don't listen to a priest. They need saving. You know? You can't, and don't join a church and think you that's the way to get there. It's not. There's many people that are Christians, and I believe they're true Christians, and they don't even go to church. Church is not a building. It's the people. That's what the word church means. And you don't see anywhere in the New Testament, you don't see the building of, you know, big church buildings, do you? You don't see any of that. They just meet in people's homes. And we're getting back after COVID. A lot of churches are struggling now. And people are meeting in homes. It's gone a bit underground, and you don't see people walking around in the New Testament. There's no, you didn't see Peter. He wasn't wearing a cross, and all that sort of stuff, and, you know, crossing himself. There's none of that. You read the New Testament, none of it. It's all invented. It's all ancient Babylonian goddess worship. That's what it is. And they've given it a new name. Who was it now in the 3rd century, I think it was? He thought he saw a vision of a cross. He was the emperor. Constantine, I think it was. And then he said, right, from now on, all of Rome is going to be Christian. And so they got rid of all the pagan temples, and they changed all the names. I think Zeus has become Peter. And so basically, Rome is a pagan city, and it still is. Roman Catholicism is a blend of Christianity. That's what they try, but you can't blend paganism and Christianity. They don't mix. They can't go together. But that's what Roman Catholicism. It's a contradiction in terms. Roman Catholicism. Catholic means international church. Well, I'm a Catholic, but I'm not a Roman Catholic. It's 12 minutes past 8. Let's play. Oh, I'm going to do a country one. This, my daughter sent me this, and she played this one. Daddy's. She's great. It's Megan Maroney and Tennessee Orange.
The wireless.
In 1979, a report to the President of the United States by the U.S. Commission on the Holocaust, chaired by Auschwitz survivor Elie Wiesel, warned the inclination to duplicate the Nazi option and once again exterminate millions of people remains a hideous threat. Those who declare that Holocaust analogies are off limits are betraying the victims of the Holocaust by denying the relevance of the Holocaust.
From the White House and the Office of the President of the United States, we present an address by Dwight D. Eisenhower.
In 1961, in his farewell address to the nation, President Dwight D. Eisenhower warned against the increasing domination of the military-industrial complex, whose total influence, economic, political, even spiritual, he said, is felt everywhere.
Akin to and largely responsible for the sweeping changes in our industrial-military posture has been the technological revolution during recent decades.
In this revolution, research has become central. It also becomes more formalized, complex, and costly. A steadily increasing share is conducted for, by, or at the direction of the federal government. The prospect of domination of the nation's scholars by federal employment, project allocations, and the power of money is ever present and is gravely to be regarded.
Yet in holding scientific research and discovery in respect, as we should, we must also be alert to the equal and opposite danger that public policy itself could become the captive of a scientific technological elite. He didn't include there specifically the medical establishment, public health, but he recognized that it was this military technology that was pushing everything. It was pushing the economy and it was pushing the culture. And this is exactly what happened in Nazi Germany and what's happening now.
Today's Best Country on the Wireless with Grant Edwards, 22 minutes past 8. We had Christopher Cross there with Sailing. And that woman you were listening to there talking about the relevance of the Holocaust, that's Vera Sharav. She was a Holocaust survivor herself, separated from her parents when she was 3 years old. Terrible father died of typhus because all those concentration camps and ghettos that they had them in, they were terrible. They were in concentration camps. I think she was sent to Ukraine, and her mother was sent. She managed to escape and got to America, and they didn't come back together again until Vera was 8 years old. Incredible. I think she lives in New York now. And before that wonderful song that Gabriella put me onto from Megan Maroney, Tennessee Orange. I really like that, and it's a great video too. If you go over to YouTube and have a look at that, it's a wonderful video. She's just a lovely singer, just a great. She reminds me of my daughter, actually. She looks like her. Let's have a look at this day in history, shall we? It's we don't even need to bother about the time. Gosh, Saturday morning, who cares? Let's have a look here. I'll start at the very beginning. So who was born on this day? If you're having a birthday, first of all, happy birthday to you. The 24th of June it is today, and John Cabot, on this day in 1497, he claims part of North America, what is now known as Canada, for England, believing that he had found Asia in Newfoundland. And on this day in 1509, Henry VIII was crowned King of England at Westminster Abbey in London, and the first Republican constitution in France was adopted today in 1793. Napoleon Bonaparte in 1812, his Grande Armée, numbering about 500,000, and they began their invasion of Russia by crossing the Niemen River on the 24th today, June to 18. Boy, that's over a couple of hundred years ago, isn't it? Unbelievable. President Franklin Pierce, he signs the Gladstone Purchase, and that was in 1853, it was a sale and purchase agreement for 76,800 square kilometres from Mexico. He paid $10 million for it, and that's now, of course, southern Arizona and New Mexico. That happened in 1853 with the president there. He didn't pay for it. He just signed the agreement. And the first exhibition by Pablo Picasso, guess how old he was? Go over here. Give us a ring. Tell me, how old do you think he was when he did his very first one? I won't say what his age is, but you can call me on 04-889-0225 and tell me how old. You just look it up on the internet. Gosh, it's not like the good old days, isn't it? You can just look it up and cheat. He was 19. That's quite young, isn't it? 1901 that happened in Paris, when it opened in Paris. In 1930, the first detection of an aeroplane using reflective radio waves, a precursor to the radar, by Naval Research Laboratory engineers in Anacostia, I should say, and that was in Washington, D.C. That was on 1930 on this day, the very first one. So 1930, man, they needed to have that, didn't they? But before then, it was, you know, touch and go where the mines were as well, because they could pick up mines and aircraft and stuff like that. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. I love radar. When I did my maritime course, I got 98% for what do they call it now? There's a certificate you get. It's radar. I can't remember what it's called, but I've got the certificate there somewhere. I'll have to dig it out and have a look at it. A year ago today, the US Supreme Court overturns Roe versus Wade. That was eliminating constitutional right to choose abortion, and that vote was 6-3 on this day. In film, in 1916, on this day, Mary Pickford, she's a Canadian, and she became the first female star to get a $1 million contract. And in music, on this day, album Little Girl Blue by Nina Simone, that was released, that was her debut album, her jazz album, 1958 on this day. I think I've actually got Nina teed up there. Let's have a little listen and see what you think. You're listening to The Wireless, and that is the unmistakable voice of Nina Simone and her debut album released on this day, 1958. And it's called Little Girl Blue. That is interesting, isn't it? She's born in 1933. You wouldn't believe it. It's still great, isn't it? That's one of her early recordings. And let's find out a little bit about her, shall we? I'll just zip in there. And I didn't realise she was a civil rights activist as well. She was a prominent figure in the civil rights movement in America. Obviously a noted jazz singer and soul singer. Her famous recordings included versions of I Love You, Porky, and My Baby Just Cares For Me. Remember that? I don't. But I'm sure some of you jazz... I'm sure Nigel Horrocks would remember. He loves jazz, don't you, Nigel? And her own civil rights anthem, Mississippi Goddamn. She was so angered by racism in America that she permanently left the country in 1973. I don't know where she went, though, and I can't sort of find looking around. She passed away of cancer in 1970. She was 70 years old in 2003. On the 21st of April, she passed away. But just before that happened, and I was just looking here, she won an award and an honorary degree by the Curtis Institute of Music in Philadelphia. That was just in April 19th, just before she passed. So Nina Simone, fantastic, eh? I don't mind that music at all. Let's have a look at sport today. Sport 1995, the third Rugby World Cup at Ellis Park, Johannesburg. The Springbok fly half, Joe Stransky, lands the winning drop goal in extra time, and South Africa beat New Zealand 15-12. that, nothing like a good game of rugby. I don't really care who wins, really, or who's playing, as long as it's a good game. Did you know that the longest match in tennis history, American John Isner defeats Nicolas Mahut of France at the Wimbledon after 11 hours 5 minutes of play over 3 days, and that was only 13 years ago, 2010. Ambrose Bierce, now he's an interesting fellow. He was born on this day in 1842. He's not having a birthday today. He passed away in 1914. Wasn't very old when he passed away, but it's an interesting story. He was a writer and a satirist. I think that's how you say it. Ambrose Bierce was an American writer. He was a soldier, having fought in the American Civil War. He was best known for his works, The Devil's Dictionary in 1911, and also An Occurrence at Oak Creek Bridge in 1890, and The Tales of Soldiers and Civilians in 1891. And he was not only a writer of fiction, but he was also a most influential journalist, and one of the most influential journalists in the United States of America at the time. His horror writing, though, that had been compared with that of Edgar Allan Poe and H.P. Lovecraft, while his satire can be likened to that of juvenile Jonathan Swift and Voltaire. Bierce famously disappeared in 1913, with his last communication was a letter, and it ended as follows: "As to me, I leave here tomorrow for an unknown destination." There are rumours in Mexico, oral traditions, that Bierce was executed by firing squad in a town of Sierra Mojada. Another of his letters stated, "Goodbye. If you hear of me being or my being stood up against a Mexican stone wall and shot to rags, please know that I think it's a pretty good way to depart this life. It beats old age, disease, or falling down the cellar stairs. To be a gringo in Mexico, that is euthanasia." Euthanasia, that's what he said. So I think he purposely walked in to Mexico. He was 71 on January the 11th in 1914. They shot him because he was a gringo. He wanted to go that way. He wanted to be shot. And so it's sort of like a suicide, isn't it? So that's Ambrose. I thought that was quite interesting. But one of the best writers of the time, and I quite like the style, even those little letters too, shot to rags. Quite good, quite witty. Horatio Kitchener, he was born on this day in 18... Actually, when was he born? Sorry about this. 24th, 1850. That's right. Now, I've got a little bit about him. He's an interesting fellow as well. Field Marshal Horatio Herbert Kitchener. He was the first Earl Kitchener, General and Secretary of War. And you know those things where they point at you, Uncle Sam wants you. Well, he was the British version of that. He was known in popular culture for the face of the Lord Kitchener wants you recruitment poster during World War One. Kitchener first gained notoriety for his brutal efforts during the Boer War. He was pretty tough character. During the First World War, he was appointed Secretary of War. He died aboard the HMS Hampshire when it struck a German mine in 1916. And that was a bit of a sad story. So that HMS Hampshire was struck by the German mine. It was just off the Orkney Islands, Scotland. And it was on its way to Russia for negotiations. And so he was on that. Field Marshal Horatio Herbert, born on this day in 1850. And Jack Dempsey, he's the boxer, isn't he? Yep, the heavyweight champion. Born on this day in 1895, gosh, that's a long time ago, he was known as Manasseh Mauler, and he held the world heavyweight champion from 1919 to 1926, and so yes, he was born in Manasseh in Colorado, USA. Now, what did he do? He won the heavyweight champion. That was not terribly, lots of titles, good on you. And Juan Manuel Fiaggio, now he's the greatest motor racing driver of all time, I think, and he's an Argentine. Manuel was an Argentine racing driver, and he was known as the El Chuco, which means El Chuco just means crooked, or, you know, I think bow-legged or something like that, and El Maestro, the master. And he was renowned for his dominance at the very outset of Formula One racing, during which period he won the championship 5 times. He won it in 1951, and then had a bit of a break for a few years, and then in 54 he won it every year, 54 all the way up to 57 he won that as well. Fangio held the record for the most times, having won the world championship of drivers for 46 years, until Michael Schumacher overtook him. And he is only he's the only Argentine driver to win the Argentine Grand Prix, a record which still remains, still has that title to this day. In 1958, Faggio was participating in a non-Formula One Cuban Grand Prix in Havana, and just prior to the event that he'd won the year earlier, which he'd set the fastest times during the practice runs as well, he was kidnapped from his hotel, and he was held for 3 days by members of Fidel Castro's movement in an attempt to embarrass the regime. That was the then president, Fulgencio Batista. He was there. He wasn't there for long. They kicked him out. I think Castro kicked him out. But this guy, amazing, eh? Juan Manuel Fangio, the best racing driver of all time, I reckon. And there's a picture of him there. If you go to On This Day, you'll see a picture of him there. They had the open cars. He's got, you know, the ring, you know, where the helmet goes around, just a strap underneath and the goggles on top. I wondered what he was. I thought he was a tank commander at first, World War II tank commander. But no, that's him, one of the best racing drivers of all time. And so let's have a look and see who else. Now, famous birthdays, celebrity birthdays today. Billy Casper, if you're into golf, he was born on this day in 1931. He won the US Open in 1959 and 1966, and the US Masters in 1970. He was born in 1931 on this day. Jeff Beck, the guitarist's guitarist, that's what he's known as. And he's widely respected for his innovative work with the English blues rock band, the Yardbirds. And he also, out on his own, the Jeff Beck Group. Beck began his playing professionally with the Screaming Lord Sutch. When Eric Clapton left the Yardbirds, Beck was recommended by Jimmy Page for the unenviable task of replacing him. Jimmy Page, wow, happened to do that. So Beck did that. He had a short tenure with the band, and he yielded some really good hits Shapes of Things. I think I remember that. He embarked on a solo career employing the then young Rod Stewart, as his singer. But a serious car accident stymied his musical output. After recovering, though, he did begin to pursue a more experimental type of music, jazz, rock, fusion type of stuff. I think the album that he put out was Beck Ola, Truth, says he, and there's one here, Blow by Blow, best illustrate this period. He constantly tinkered and experimented with the new directions, winning 8 Grammy Awards between 1986 and 2010 for his guitar work, and he was inducted into the Rock Hall of Fame twice, actually, as a member of the Yardbirds in 92 and also as a solo artist in 2009. Born on this day, he's the Silent Generation, 1944. Wow. Passed away, sadly, just earlier this year. Now, what happened to him now? I think he had heart failure. I'll tell you. No, he got meningitis, bacterial meningitis. He was 78, and he passed away on January the 10th this year. Jeff Beck. Mick Fleetwood, I've actually got some music from him too, I might play it a bit later on. And Mick Fleetwood, he's still alive and kicking, he's 76 today. Of course, Mick is the drummer, he's best known as the drummer, yes, and co-founder of Fleetwood Mac. And the group's name comes from a combination of Fleetwood Mac's name and also the bassist John Mac McVie. And the first form of the band was founded in 1967, and it featured McVie and Peter Green and Jimmy Spencer along with Bob Brunning. And the group released their first album in 1968, entitled Peter Green's Fleetwood Mac. The second incarnation of the group originated with the new lineup, most notably after Peter Green left the band in 1970. His second form was known for having Christy McVie. These were new, Christy McVie and Stevie Nicks. Now, they were brand new members. That was a whole big change, wasn't it? He was born on this day, 75 years old, born on this day, 1947. Let's play a tune from Fleetwood Mac, shall we? Today's best country on the wireless with Grant Edwards, and that is Fleetwood Mac, Hold Me. I had another one there lined up as well, and I was going to play that. Never mind. Should we go back and have a look at the rest of that today in history, or is that you've just about had enough of it? I tell you what, there was some interesting things that did happen on this day, though. You wouldn't believe this. A sudden outbreak of St. John's dance caused people in the streets in Aachen, Germany, to experience hallucinations, and they began to jump and twitch uncontrollably until they collapsed from exhaustion. That was in 1374. And there's an interesting story. If you go to this thing, it's onthisday.com. Very interesting story there about that. It's a bit long-winded, so I won't go into it. I was going to, but I can't be bothered now. 36 years old today, the Lionel Messi. He's a football player, isn't he? He is someone to be talking about as well. Argentine, Argentine he is. He's commonly ranked as the best player in the world and rated by some in the sport as the greatest player of all time. He holds numerous records, currently plays for FC Barcelona. In 2014, he led Argentina in the FIFA World Cup finals. Born on this day in 1987, Lionel Messi, football star from Argentina. There we are, that's him. I think there was some... Oh, he was 16 years old. That's when he first got... That was his debut at FC Barcelona. Only 16, not bad, eh? Pretty good stuff. So that's him, celebrity birthdays. And that sudden outbreak, that's a very... interesting. Sally Fields, she divorces on this day. She divorces her second husband, Graham Geisman. Anything else interesting there? Prime Minister of Canada, Arthur Meehan. He was the one that was a bit weak, I think, wasn't he? He got married to Jessie Cox. I think we read about him earlier. He did something. I think he must have had a... Well, I'll have a quick look and see. He wasn't very good. He was Prime Minister twice. He was Canadian Prime Minister. He served two terms, that's right. July 1920 to December 21, and then again in June 1926, but by September he'd gone. And he was the first Prime Minister under born after the Confederation, and usually considered one of the weakest Prime Ministers in Canadian history. Yes, so that's right. Yeah, he was born on June 16th. That's why I thought I remembered him. And born in Anderson, Ontario. I don't know why I'm talking about this. Anyone famous here? Like, what have we got here? Anyone famous kick the bucket today? Not really. No one that I know. That fatal dance manias. I suppose we should have a look at that. Could be. That's interesting. That happened back during the Roman Catholic period in Europe. There wasn't really any Protestants back then in 1374. It was on this day that the first major incident of the dance mania in medieval Europe broke out, and it occurred in the German city of Aachen, and it spread to other towns as well, right down to the Rhine. Individuals took up dancing, and they seemed unable to stop, and soon others joined them. And accounts say that the dancers hardly paused to eat or sleep for days, and sometimes weeks. It was clear that participants didn't want to dance. They were described as grimacing and exhausted and often in pain, and they shook and twitched and just continued to dance. In 1374, it was named St. John's Dance for St. John the Baptist, and as an example, one of the strangest social phenomena of the Middle Ages in Europe. The earliest known case was in 1020 in Bernburg, when 18 peasants danced wildly around the church. But the best documented case of all was 500 years ago in the French city of Strasbourg, and it was called St. Vitus Dance. That's where they came from. You know, when your kid's all twitching, he's got St. Vitus Dance. And it began in 1518 with a woman named Frey Tofria, and and stepping outside of her house, she began dancing uncontrollably, and she did that for 6 days in the streets. And 100 people had joined her within a week, and by the end of the month, 400 people were dancing without seeming able to stop. The city council tried to help by seeking medical advice, which told them it was due to overheated blood. They probably unwisely decided to encourage the dancers, hoping that they would just get it out of their system, I suppose. And they cleared a market space, and they set aside guild halls and hired musicians to accompany them. They even arranged for strong men to support the dancers so they could keep dancing. The results were fatal, though, because many people died through exhaustion, heart attacks and stroke. Eventually, the city council reversed the policy and they banned public dancing. And they shipped those affected off to a nearby shrine of St. Vitus. Did you know that? That's where it comes from. They went there to be healed. Examples of dance mania continued to occur throughout Europe. Similar cases called Tantrism, which has occurred in southern Italy, and local people thought themselves that they might have been bitten by the local poisonous species of spider, you know, the tarantula, and they just danced compulsively in an effort to cure themselves. Opinion today is divided about what actually caused the dance mania. Travelling religious pilgrims have been put forward as the possible instigators. But religious pilgrims usually dance out of choice. It was clear these dancers, they didn't want to continue dancing. They were just doing it. They weren't happy about it at all. Another suggestion is that ergo poisoning from the rye, which produced, you know, that's the LSD, that produces LSD-like hallucinations. So it's ergo, I think it is. If it's French, probably French. ergot. Could be ergot, but I think it's ergo. So that's there, but however, not all areas, they didn't all grow rye, and ergo poisoning tends to cut off the blood supply using making movements a bit more difficult. So obviously they ruled that out. It's more likely a diagnosis of just mass hysteria brought on by a combination of stress and superstitious beliefs. The Strasbourg outbreak that continued, it certainly took place at a time of famine and hardship. So, you know, people were pretty stressed out. And there's also, it also appears there had been a belief that the saints might have done this, placed a curse on the dancing subjects. St. Vitus was regarded as the patron saint of dancing and capable of cursing people. In Strasbourg, dancers were, they were taken to a nearby shrine. That's right, we read about that. And Catholicism, though, you know, that is where it is. See, there, that fervent worship of saints, that gave way to Protestantism. And the rise of rationalist ideas across Europe too, the dance mania on any scale, appeared to have died out. It remains a very strange example of the human condition, what we're capable of. A modern equivalent is perhaps in 1962, the laughter epidemic broke out in Tanganyika. I don't even know where that is. Among the girls in a mission school, there was about 1,000 of them there. When was that in the community? Yeah, they went on. It affected about 1,000 people in the surrounding community for about 18 months. So that's the latest one in 1962. St. Vitus dance, eh? And that's interesting, eh? The fatal dance mania of medieval Europe. On this day it happened in 1374. That was the first, when the first started. One bird walked out and started dancing and they all joined her. Crazy, isn't it, how things like that can happen? Oh, I've just shut down the whole thing. So that's the end. That is the end of the This Day in History by Grant Edwards, muddling his way through that. It's 8 minutes to 9. Why don't we have another? What about Bon Jovi? Do you like them?